Welcome. This is Unfolding, the show where I unfold creative business minds. My name is Marco Pfann, and now I just want you to sit back and enjoy the show. So, welcome back. Today we're speaking to Rob Middleton. He is the former ECD of Astro. For those of you who do not know Astro, Astro is the largest pay TV network in Asia. And the way I got to know Rob was, what was it, like 10 years ago?
Yeah, Must have been 10 years ago.
Right? And you actually hired my partner or former company to rebrand 50 of your own channels.
That's right.
And I know you have...
It's unfathomable, right? Astro is a huge, still is. I mean, Asia's largest pay TV platform, but it covers movies and radio and everything else. It's got 187 channels, and of those 187 channels, over 80 of them are Astro-owned channels, their own branded channels. So we have to design the channels, we have to promote the channels, we have to promote the content, we have to do whatever. But the reason that they have so many is that in Malaysia, it's a weird setup here, as opposed to other parts in Asia, Malaysia has no one pure ethnic group period that's dominant. So we have Malays. And of the Malays, that they make up 60% of the population, half of them are, very stringent, believe in, more religious based than others that are more worldly thinking. And so of those, then there's different age groups and brackets and other things like that. And then there's a few things that bring them all together, humor and, films and things. And then, of course, we have Tamil, which is South Indian, not North Indian. So on top of that, we have a Chinese population that's divided into Cantonese, Mandarin, and Hokkien. So those are three different languages that you're dealing with there. And then on top of that, we have all of the normal stuff that takes place. So, your normal sports and things like that as well that we look after. So,
yeah. I remember we also had to do everything for Indian cultures too, right? You served, like the Astro channel, it's also served like Indian, Indian people.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah, Tamil.
Broadcasted.
So we did a lot of stuff for Tamil people. But at the same time, in addition to that, we also had, we do a lot of Hindi content because Hindi's not for Hindi, Tamil Indian population. Hindi's actually enjoyed by everybody else, as is Korean. The Chinese stuff has actually blown up in the last few years. So especially for mainland costume and period dramas that they actually have, that they're on the coattails of the Korean stuff that's taking place. So now everybody's watching Korean and they're watching Chinese. And so it's just this weird thing going back and forth. It's lovely. It's great. But nowadays, since the 10 years that you've been there, of course, streaming and everything else has exploded. Astro has changed its management to something that's a little bit more, not as forward thinking as before. And so they're in a little bit of trouble with some things. And so channels are being, tried out left, right, and center. There's a lot of streaming services you can get on your phone here now. There's a lot of VPN usage so that you can pick up anything you want pretty much from around the world. There's piracy was an issue. It was quite a heavy, heavy issue. And it's not resolved itself, but because there's now so much choice, now that you've got everything out there constantly all the time, some that costs, some that doesn't cost, plus all the fast channels are out there, piracy is down quite a bit.
Really?
But not because of anybody's efforts to stop piracy. It's just that everybody's got so much other stuff to actually go in and look after, right?
So,
it's like the more choices you have, the less choices you make, right? So it's the weird... It's the paradox of choice.
So perfect introduction. Thank you. Because what I wanted to talk to you about today is multicultural teams. And the reason why I think you're the perfect person to talk about building creative teams really is because you're a foreigner, like you're an expat in Asia. I think like over you've been there for over 30 years.
Oh, yeah,
now,
yeah,
right?
35 years, yeah.
35.
I'm sorry about the little weird mustache thing there. That I don't know why that exists. That shouldn't be there, but still, nonetheless.
Well, I'll try to fix it.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it.
And one of the things is like you're the most smart, you're the most humble, empathic, and smartest guy that I've met in the industry, and that means a lot. And working with you, like I could feel like this humbleness, not only towards your bosses and us as a vendor, but really to everyone in your team, no matter how young they were. Mm-hmm. I've experienced that when we walked by your people and you always had a minute for everyone. How, like, what's like my question here?
It's not a secret sauce. It's actually pretty easy. There's in my experience out here with watching other people at or my experiences with them at different television groups or advertising agencies or production places, whatever. There seems to be two different kinds of creative directors. There's the a-hole kind, which is somebody that's who's weirdly sycophantic to clients and that sort of stuff, but at the same time feels that his underlings should also be sycophantic to him or her, and that they lash out at people. They don't give them an opportunity to grow. They do things in a particular way that is very rigid and stylized. They're not pushing anybody's, getting people to grow anyway. They're making them do something that they may not actually want to do, and they're not being allowed to grow through the whatever they're actually making. And it's always negative, 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 negative. No, don't do that. Do this. Don't take a, we can find somebody else to do that. And then the other kind, which is I'm trying to emulate, is the guy that, the first one I had was a guy called Clark Donnelly back in Canada. He was my creative director that he, right from the word go, it didn't matter who you were on the crew. It didn't matter who you were in the building. He was always, encouraging you, to come up with different things, to do whatever. He always had the time of day for you. And it just through, that constant, not fatherly thing, but I mean, through that constant, feeling that it was okay to try things out and do whatever, you just sort of gave more. You pushed yourself a little bit more. You would be working late nights. You'd be working weekends. You'd be doing all these other things, like testing out different ideas. You'd be doing more research. You'd be, having more fun. You'd be doing some tests. You'd be starting to sweat over the little things, right? You'd be putting a lot more blood, sweat, and tears in it. And it wasn't because that was being demanded. That was because you started to care more about what you were doing, right? Because somebody allowed you to grow into what that was. And every step of the way, you're learning as you go along. So I try to emulate that as well with the people that I work with, that, I don't dictate to them what to do. We work together in trying to get something done. I pump in a bunch of suggestions. I show some, a lot of examples. I've had to close the door a few times for, that's way out in left field. That's not going to work because of, and we'll save it for something else, or this won't work because of, but I mean, as long as you're, showing them, where the path is that you want to go, how fast they want to drive, whatever they want to drive to get there is fine. So it just, and I think by and large, creative people, I mean, the word that you used, humble, a lot of creative people that I've met are naturally humble, right? Especially in the industries that I've been working in, or, with the promotions teams and that kind of teams themselves, because they're not doing it for, they're not doing it for money. That's one thing. I mean, it's not an industry you're going to make a lot of money out of. But they're doing it for the growth, and they're sort of doing it for, trying to bang it off each other. And if one of their coworkers sees it and compliments them, that's gold. Saying, oh man, that's really fantastic. They feel really good about it. They don't go out bragging and showing off. If you're a bragger and a show off, you're not going to last long in that kind of team situation. You're going to be moving on into something else.
What I love what you just said, and this is so true, I never articulated that before or heard it being articulated, is creatives don't make it for money. We all know that, but we do that because we want to grow, right? We want to grow in the skill set. Yep. We want to grow in the understanding of everything. So I love that. Yeah. How did you foster that?
Well, it's just, being there, going through it myself and then getting the opportunity to foster quite early. I mean, when I first got to Asia, I helped launch MTV. MTV Asia way back in 91 when I was only 9 years old, back when MTV was good, right? When, you know, it was fantastic. And then 3 years later, Murdoch, you know, the lovely guy and his lovely family, they bought the satellite platform in Hong Kong that we had MTV at. And then it came down, but because the people working at MTV couldn't, I got separated away and they said, hey, we want to launch a different music channel against MTV. And it's going to really, you know, to threaten them up. And it might stay, it might not. We might use it as a bargaining chip, but here's some money and, you know, go get your friends and go make a channel. So in 5 or 6 weeks, we created this great channel we call Channel V. Lots of stories behind it that I can tell you all about later on. But so we launched that, and then and that was history was made. MTV got kicked out. We came on the platform. We created ones for India itself specifically, created one for China itself specifically. Then we created another one for the Philippines. We created another one for Australia, another one for Thailand, another one for Korea. So we had this giant network of music channels that were communicating, working with each other back and forth. And the reason it was called Channel V originally was they were going to be working with Viva from Germany, which, you know, that didn't work out at all. But they looked at Viva as a model because they're the one in Germany that was kicking MTV's butt, right? So at the time. Yeah. So that was that. And then from there, so for all of those, I got to build creative teams in all of those different countries. So I got to, you know, build a creative team in India and Australia and, you know, Thailand and, you know, the Philippines and all of those sort of things, and just and build them through the focus of what the brand was, and the tone of voice and the idea of who they are and the presentation of what it is, and getting their heads around the perception of, you know, what that brand was all about and what is, you know, what it was supposed to be saying and what its personality was and how he was going to be communicating with people. And each one of those different places has a different, you know, idea of, you know, exactly what it is, but there were always sort of a fluid, a sameness that went across. As soon as you saw a spot, you knew, you know, that was one of our spots, but, you know, it put it into a different environment. And so it was a logo that was constantly changing things that, you know, it was one of those things that, you know, we were very lucky to build it from the ground up, right? So it wasn't MTV. The previous one was MTV coming into Asia and everybody wanting MTV. Oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. But then MTV coming into Asia and telling people, okay, this is how it is. This is who we are. With the Channel V one, we turned it around and basically said, you know, this is what we want to be. And we want to build it up from going in from there. And so we were locally made, but we just happened to be of a high world-class standard. And from there, people really embraced it. And so the Channel V Thailand, you know, 40% of the music, or more than 40% of the music, eventually was all Thai music, all Thai artists. It's all in Thai, you know, and then it just built up the music video industry and everything else there. Same thing in the Philippines, same thing wherever we went, you know, India as well. And then MTV eventually came back and then they had, you know, too much choice. And so, yeah, there you go. But it was fun. It was great. And so that was the big training ground for that. And then
I love that. So you built that those channels, you built them up. It's like an internal thing, right? It's not like MTV coming with a Western ideology.
Yeah. The whole bit, I'd go in there, work with everybody, figure out, you know, what the strategy was going to be. I'd write a Bible for, you know, who it is and what we're all about. I had a general Bible for the network that I'd written for it, you know, the idea of, you know, how it is and why we do things this place, and, you know, where it is to grow and, you know, what we want from you. And so we're looking for, and most of the people that, you know, were involved then, you know, they've all gone on to be young filmmakers or, animators that are great, movie makers, or, you know, commercial directors and that sort of stuff. So everybody's still, you know, taking that style and they've moved on from there. And it's been great.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So the question that comes to mind is, I remember like when we work for you, that you were very keen that I go out there on the street, meet people, go to museums, kind of like get a sense of the culture. So what is it that Westerners can learn when they want, or what did you learn leading Asian teams.
Well,
what's the huge, what's the big difference here?
The weird thing is, like, the stereotypical American coming in and wanting a cheeseburger, and then, you know, when people didn't understand what it is, just saying it louder, cheeseburger or whatever, but that doesn't work. You know, you're just, you know, going through there. If you're going to go in to a culture, immerse yourself in it, right? Put both feet in there.
Yeah.
You can take parts of, you know, what you are and mix it in there as well, but actually appreciate that. Don't put up a stone wall of, oh my God, you know, look at this poverty, you know, whatever, you know, there's still people there, you know, it's still whatever you find it. There's humor in everything, you know, what's funny, what's getting by, you know, politics, how's that go? Learn as much as you can and just have some fun with it. And plus you're going to have great conversation stuff as well. So, and then people are going to be sitting there, you'd be talking to them and they're going to say something about some old legend or whatever, and you're going to hang on to that and go, what is that all about? And you start bringing it out and people are like, yeah. So does everybody know about that? Yeah. And so, cause you and I, we grew up with, certainly from these different places, we grew up with different bedtime stories and different legends and different hockey stars, you know, different sports stars and, you know, different family histories. This is a whole new place that you're going into, right? So that, you know, India, for example, you're going in to a place that loves cricket, but at the same time, you know, loves, you know, different things from all over the planet as well, you know, that, you know, has a completely different idea of, you know, what the temperature of food should be and how long that should actually stay in your system. They're the greatest.
Oh, how spicy. Planet,
you know, okay. Thailand, an incredible sense of humor, as far as it goes, you know, really, really high level, laugh out loud, ideas and stuff that goes through there as well. So, as a Westerner going into those cultures, and I'm sure it's everywhere else, don't go in with preconceived notions. You've got, you know, an idea, understanding of who you are. I had a good friend who passed away recently, but he was the epitome of it because he was teaching. He was a wonderful Indian animator that I used to work with. And he went on to become like the CD of Disney as well. And then he would get this gig from this fellow in wherever the Kardashian family's from. And it was always the joke there, whatever. It's a
no idea.
Pardon me?
Don't ask me where they come from.
Yeah,
where they're from. I don't know.
No, it's like Armenia or something like that. So it could be, you know, it was something like Armenia, a country that, you know, corruption was a bit here and there and doing whatever. And so there was this one fellow who was sort of a criminal big guy. He was upset with the education system for some reason. And so he built a bit of an institute, just a small place where anybody and everybody that wants to explore their creative arts could go and they could learn. Yeah. It didn't matter what your age was. It didn't matter what, you know, your background was. It didn't matter, you know, what your education level was or your skill level was. And so he invited this guy to come out and teach this class for a couple of weeks. On basic animating, you know, on a Mac, on a laptop, and, you know, bringing people out there and doing whatever. So people would come. He supplied some Mac. So this guy had put up this, brought this fellow in. He sat down and he said he had a class of about 25, and they were not necessarily all young people. There were some that were quite young. He said there were some that were like 12, 14, but most were 18 to 25. But he did have a couple of students that were, you know, 50s and that sort of stuff. But the thing was that he speaks English and Hindi, and nobody in Armenia speaks, or none of the class spoke English or Hindi. And so they had, you know, basically communication problems to deal with, other styles to actually go with. So he would show them how things actually work and do whatever. And so everybody started picking up on it. A couple of people left because they realized it wasn't for them, but others really sort of enjoyed it. And then as they were enjoying it, more people started joining the class, and they were telling their friends, and they were coming in. And so he'd started, you know, with a relatively small class. It came to the point that they couldn't fit anybody else into the room. And you know, by the end of the 2 weeks, all these people had made their own animations about different things with audio. And he showed me a few, and they were astonishing, right? They're really, really good, you know? And so he went back. He made it a regular thing that every year he likes to go back and hang out and do that class again.
I remember that spirit when we were there. It's like your people that were really fast and actually executing stuff. Like wherever my freelancers over here in Germany and Europe, they want to think, 2 weeks to think, and then they came back with something. And you people just did it. Like, well, that wasn't amazing. And I can relate what to the story, because it's like, yes, it's the work culture and the experience working with anyone in Asia is different. It's so, it's fast.
Yeah. Well, every country is a little bit different, but I mean, yes, the work cultures are, you have to get by that. The work culture in a lot of places is, very strict, and some are very 9-to-5, some are more open, some are, lackluster, some are, a little bit, whatever. When you're building a creative team, it's usually the same all the way through, right? So creative people, as you were saying earlier on, they share things that go through. Creative people are, they're smart and naive at the same time. They're passionate about, what they do. They're playful, they're funny, they're introverts and extroverts, weirdly enough, at the same time, they're right on that line that it does things. They have loads of energy that they put into different things they do, and that loads of energy pays off. They don't mind working, mm-hmm. Longer hours and doing stuff, as long as, they're seeing the growth of whatever it is, and they're getting, really something out of it, right? And they're getting to see what it is. And so, again, if you're dealing with a creative director that's a dick, that's on their head, you're just going to get 9-to-5 mentality out of them. You're not going to get any blood, sweat, and tears. You're not going to get any extra effort, right? So with those other people, that what you get is you get that little piece of extra, the thing, the unsaid thing, that little piece of soul that's right there, There's a reason that people talk about, Mona Lisa or, the Da Vinci or whatever, still to this day, it's just that little extra bit of, something, soul that's actually put in there and take it across. And so that's from the effort that actually is going into doing it, not just stealing somebody else's work like advertising. Yeah,
don't get me started on advertising agencies. It's so actually that's a good cue here. Why did you, because we were a small shop, why did you choose to work with a small shop instead of working with a big agency back then?
Well, there were a few things. It was mostly trust, to be honest with you. I had, I narrowed down, a big group, because I wasn't necessarily paying for it. I had to get money coming in from all the different channels. I had to get that lady, you remember Justina as well. She was one of the other people involved. So all of these people, involved. And so I had to get them on board before what it was going to be. And I had to hold their hand through the idea of what it was going to be. And so they, some people put up this local agency to do, and then this advertising agency to do. And it's just, it wasn't that their work was subpar. It's just that I had no trust in what they were going to be bringing to the table above what we're going to ask. So we had done a couple of things with these other places, and so we gave them a brief, and what you got back was pretty much what the brief was, right? So in working with guys like yourself, here's what we want to do, here's what the plan is. You took that and you cranked it up even more and said, okay, now we got you covered. We understand what you actually want, but how about if we just, we do this, and everybody's, holy shit, this is fantastic. So what I had when we were looking at who it would be, we had three or four different places from around the world that we knew that could be, that kind of thing. And it's just, what you guys came back with from your original brief, that was it right off the bat. So everybody, we didn't have to look at anything else. As soon as everybody saw that, that was fine. Awesome. That was it. They were locked in. And so that was very happy. But again, I mean, all of that stuff came through in.
Thanks so much. That actually means a lot for me. And thanks for that testimonial. But that was it was an amazing time back then. But, and I remember, you are not very keen about working with big agencies, right? Why?
No.
Why?
No, especially advertising agencies. Because, because I want to say words, but I don't think I can say them if small children are watching. The agencies here, at least around here, are especially when you're dealing with an advertising agency. Advertising agencies traditionally here, they, in the words of George Carlin, they sell things that people don't need, don't want, can't afford, by preying on people's fears and insecurities, right? And that's it. That's the formula that they use, and that's it. If, you know, if I wear these jeans, my butt's going to look great, and Tommy's going to invite me to the dance. If I drive this car, women are not going to notice that I'm bald, and I might actually get to have sex with somebody. So that's it. That's pretty much advertising agencies. But nowadays, you know, and agencies are still huge. They still have a lot of people. They put most of their effort into their pitch to get your business. And then once that's done, because they're a business, they're moving on to the next guy to get their pitch. So the thing's going through there. So and what I found with agencies themselves is they don't really do any of the work. You know, they may have a copywriter or whatever, but I mean, when they're actually doing graphic work or graphic samples, they're going out and hiring a freelancer to take care of that, or they're hiring a freelance copywriter, or they're hiring, you know, whatever. And mostly the ideas that they come up with are, they're not coming up with at all. They're just looking around the planet, studying YouTube or seeing the latest reel of shots or whatever, and then stealing bits and pieces here and there, or just taking a direct spot and then, you know, saying that this is the kind of thing that we're going to do for you. And then you have to break it down for them, and you have to say why it wouldn't work, what's wrong with it, you know, how that doesn't actually fit with this culture, which is weird to say to an advertising agency that's from that culture that doesn't understand why you can't do this particular thing there, and because and why it doesn't work. All it looks good on is the agency's reel, but it doesn't do anything for, you know, pushing, you know, the brand's positioning, or or anything. It's not through that positioning of who they are. It's not, you know, that thing at all. Agencies are scum. Agencies overcharge. Agencies are slow. You just said, you know, if you go out and you ask a guy to do something, it'll take 2 weeks. If we're working with an agency, sometimes, you know, at Astro, our marketing department would have a retainer with an agency, and you tell them, okay, you know, if they're going to do these graphics, they come back and they'd show what they're going to do. You make suggestions for how you change it to make it better and how it would fit better. And, you know, they've just taken this from, you know, these guys in Hong Kong. And then they've taken this other thing because it's a backward panel from After Effects that they've just taken and cleaned up, which is, you know, it's kind of cheap. So don't use that and do it. And then they give it back, and it'd be something that you would be able to do in 2 hours. No problem. If you took a coffee break for about 20 minutes along the way, you know, and stuff. So, but it takes the agency 2 weeks to come back. And so when they come back, it's the same thing. And they're not doing it anyway. They're giving it to somebody else. So my thing is that all of the people that we help bring up in these creative teams, they do all the jobs of an advertising agency anyway, and a production company. They're writers, producers, directors, editors, animators, maybe not great at it, but I mean, they're learning and pushing themselves along the way. An agency will, you know, if they're working with a bank, I've worked with a bank recently where you see a template that these graphic guys are actually having to work with, graphic kids in the bank's creative area. And that's come from an advertising agency who doesn't explain anything about it, why it's that particular way, what the gradient means, why that particular color, why anything actually goes through. It's just, it's locked in. That's it. That's all you can use. You don't understand. Plus the agency themselves, perhaps they don't even know because it was done by a third party anyway. Right. And a lot of it had to be fixed by the creative in-house team in order to utilize it for different formats, right? From, you know, portrait and vertical and social media.
Yeah, two things I've heard. Like, first of all, and it's just quickly for the audience, clients like you, and you run a big team, a big network. You are the kind of clients my audience wants. And what you just said is like, big TV channels don't necessarily want to work with agencies, but sometimes they don't have a choice because creative the smaller shops don't talk the way they need to, or they don't just, what is it?
Well, it's being in the right place, the right time. There's a lot of connection stuff as well. So the agencies through the 4As or 5As or whatever they've got through that whole, ecosystem that they have of working with each other. And plus it's not that big a business. So people skip around and do whatever, but they're still overly paid and they under deliver, constantly all the time. That's their mantra. They shouldn't exist. They should be spiraling around the toilet room right now. That's a good question. That's an excellent question as well. I had a couple that I helped out for just doing a voice for their demo reel because they put out on social media, we're just a mom and pop shop, literally mom and pop, this, that, next thing. Da, 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 da. We're just looking for this kind of business. This is what we're going to do. And I wrote them and I said, hey, you look great. You're obviously very graphics oriented. There's something wrong with your audio that's coming through. There's a bad mix that's actually in there. There's two little effects that don't quite make sense. Let me fix it for you. And so, we did give it to them. No charge, just had some fun. And then since then, from time to time, they've been kind enough to, we've got this gig. Would you mind, helping us write it? Or we've got this gig. Would you mind, just doing a voiceover or something? So kindness, helps getting through there. But it's not going to work for everybody. Exactly. I mean, getting the word out, how do you actually do that? And especially nowadays with a lot of things that are suffering too, you see, with AI, for example, with, it's affected audio houses out here. It certainly affects voiceover guys anyway, that are out here. It's not a situation of, they don't do Tamil. They don't do Chinese. They do. They pick it up, put it through there. It's not quite there yet with those particular languages as far as, the emphasis or the smoothness or the suave or sophisticated elements that they want to put through there, but it's certainly there. And so people can get very cheap work. Mm-hmm. Well, they don't virtually pay anything for it. Same thing for music houses. It's very tough too, because now there's a lot of stuff that's actually out there that AI can actually sample and bring in and do for you. And then in starting and coming with animation, there's, what is it? Huggy Face or whatever. The AI sample where, you can you basically write a short story. It'll give you a graphic novel of your short story within 15 seconds. And if you want to animate it, you have to go into various details of what it'd be. And some of it is not terrible, right? So it's getting there too, right? So it's tough for everybody going around there. But so not to scare anybody with the small shops and that sort of stuff. I think it's the small shops are the ones that are actually going to do better. I mean, they have to present, of course they have to work with agencies. Of course they have to do some stuff. Agencies are the ones that are going to get, all the bread, the bread and butter work for the time being for whatever, but there's nothing wrong with going and approaching, clients that are actually out there.
You can't go around the middleman. As a small shop, you can approach big agents, big TV channels.
Of course you can. All they can do is say no, right? So, you put something out there, you've got a demo reel or you've got an idea of what you're going to be, or you've got a website, samples or whatever this is going to be. The agency's going to steal it anyway. So, might as well.
I love it. Okay.
Just find out, there's every country puts out a list, or actually in Asia, there's a big one that's put out every year for all the different agencies, production houses and that sort of stuff, and who's who and that sort of thing. So you just have to track down their email and find out, because every agency is going to have a talent producer or a commercial producer or a client, services guy. You just get a hold of those people and just send them mass emails. It's going to take you like 2 days of, putting out through that. But usually from that 2 days, you at least will just start getting, some stuff back, and maybe some of the agencies without using you will say, we really like your stuff. It's great. Mm-hmm. Keep in touch. Here's my, whatever. So at least you've got something that's getting you through the door to start that way. Through there, but social media wise, putting it out there, having fun with it, whatever, get yourself involved with all different societies, from not Promax because that doesn't exist anymore, but things like that, the international creative community of getting your stuff out there. And I go and I, as you said, everybody's humble, they don't like shouting for themselves and do whatever, but they've got to put themselves into different environments where the other people are going to shout on their behalf, saying, I saw this is great. Take a look.
Rob, one more thing I wanted to talk to you about, and that ties back to what you said before. You're now consulting like banks and big companies, big brands on.
Well, it's not big. I mean, I've got a television group I'm doing next month that's based out of Singapore. They only have six channels and they're on, it's the reverse, right? So they have six channels, but they're on all these different platforms throughout Asia that all speak all these different languages. So it's sort of reverse engineering, you know, what I know and what I do for them to figure out how they can be better at their presentation, at their with the perception of who they are, and you know everything, you know, and that all comes through their positioning, but then how they look and how their tone of voice and where they play their spots. Again, like I've been monitoring them here, and they've got a few issues of where and when they're placing, you know, their messages, and because who those messages are for, it's unclear. Right? So it's not like you need to know. Yes. Who you're speaking to, what and how you're actually speaking to them. You need to know where these art people are. You need to know, you know, what time of day you're going to be talking to them, because the audience has changed throughout the course of the day. They change throughout the course of the week. You're not the same person on Monday that you are on Friday or Saturday. You know, your content and your product is going to be changing as well. That goes through there. So even if there's only like 20% of your stuff that fits the idea of who you think you actually are, keep promoting it in that style, you know, so, and then look at it in that particular way. But then how does that translate to somebody in Thailand? How does that translate to somebody in India? And again, India is a place with, you know, 280 languages as well. So, I mean, not quite that many, but I mean, quite a few. So, and if their platform is staying the same, if they're not changing their spots within there, then they should be creating particular spots to run cross channel on those platforms that tell, you know, things that are specifically targeted to those audiences. And of course, with their social media that's targeted.
So you're not only creating, you're not only building creative teams, you really consult those channels, those brands on how they resonate with the markets.
Well, yeah, but see, that's the step in. That's my dream. Yeah. So my first thing is I've got a group meeting with all of their promo teams, their marketing teams, their creative teams, and their channel managers. And then through that, we're just going to do a full day of, you know, walking through, this is, you know, the kind of things you're actually doing. This is the kind of things that we can make it easier. This is the kind of stuff we can be doing to make it better. This is not going to cost you anything to do. We can, if you don't think it's going to work, would you be willing to do an experiment? Let's try this and we'll try that. I'll help you do this. I'll help you do that. But then let's look at, you know, where you're actually getting feedback from, what kind of feedback actually is it? You know, what is the goal that you're actually trying for? Are you trying to get onto more platforms? Are you trying to get more viewers? Are you trying to talk to advertisers? You know, all of those kind of things. Let's think about those. Let's break it apart. And let's, you know, as opposed to trying to do everything at once, let's do one thing really, really, really well, and then see how that works, and then something else. And then for each of the different countries, let's try something as well. We don't have to do all the countries at once. We can start with one, and let's just experiment here and see how that actually works. So for them, my experiences in promotions and filmmaking and creating spots and creating channels and personalities and that sort of stuff, but stuff that resonates and speaks with viewers, not anything that talks down to people. That's why you have to know who your audience actually is and what time of day it actually is as well, because you want to be able to, you know, talk to people about, you know, what they're feeling at that particular time. Plus, you know, it's affinity as well. So I mean, if you're watching a crime show, you don't want to insert promotional spots talking about some kiddie program, because that just feels weird and reminds people that they're watching television. You're talking to a predisposed audience anyway that's already watching your content in your channel. So they'd be interested in, you know, more similar content or other stuff that you have coming up, especially the big thing that you want, you know, be pushing through, not some kiddie stuff. Cause you put in kiddie stuff there, it starts making them feel weird, like a pedophile or something. So, you know, then it reminds them to, you know, if they got a choice, they can change the channel, which is the last thing you want them to do. Nowadays with, but I mean, it's not just, you know, linear television, but linear television, that's the weird thing. Linear television has made a huge comeback with all these fast channels that are coming through. India's embraced it massively. You've got tons and tons of FAST channels. I don't know what it's like in Germany at the moment, but out here, they're starting to pop up a lot. In Malaysia, we've got maybe a dozen that are attached to different platforms. I mean, free advertising supported television. And so it's like they'll take, you know, one particular genre or even one particular show. And so you'll have, you know, Friends or something. So you'll have the Friends channel and they'll just play every episode of Friends. So as you're sitting there, you know, all day with your mouth open and stuffing your face with cheeseburgers.
Is that a Friends channel, actually?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if they have a Friends channel, but I mean, they certainly do it with a lot of other content. There's a Twilight Zone channel. There's other stuff channels. So they play every episode of everything. But within those, they have commercial breaks, right? So is linear television again. So each one of those channels is branded differently. Each one of those channels has different promotions. Each one of those channels does cross promotions for other FAST channels that are there. Each one of those channels does platform promotions and big marketing promotions for them as well, to get you to buy up to other things, because they also have a bunch of on-demand content that they're offering. They also have a bunch of other things that are there. So the free advertising supported TV, it's linear television.
It's the
just
way
come
in
back.
To, so, to get people subscribed to the paid plans, right?
Well, it is in some cases. In others, it's to get people to buy up for their content on demand or VOD or SVOD. So, you know, to get subscription. Again, yes, you're actually right.
And that's kind of...
That's very, very true. But others are offshoots of different things. Some are very clever, like Peacock is part of NBC, which is part of something else, NBC Universal. So they all sort of work together in a nefarious way to try and get your money by seemingly offering you free content.
That's kind of what Amazon is doing,
but they're not,
too, right? And we don't have that over here. Like in Europe, it's non-existent. And it's actually, you should actually come over and consult a few of those TV channels over here.
Get me over there and we'll start talking. Now, Amazon's got a few different services, but for the most part, they're not doing well in some markets and doing incredibly well in others. In India here,
really
not so good. But in other places like Hong Kong, Thailand, other places, fantastic. You know, and they have really upped their game as far as some of their content is concerned. You know, really, you know, very high quality, short lived things. I mean, everything just like Netflix, you get two seasons of it and then it's gone.
Sometimes
you know, disappeared.
So this is amazing. Like you actually, you have a wealth of information, knowledge, insights around TV stations, really, and also the strategic thing. And what you just pointed out is so different. I'm going to get to this in a moment, but it's a totally different thinking and mindset. At least here in Europe, it's all about. It's not this intrinsic. Like we grow, we experiment. No, it's like we are this. And we want to find ourselves, so we attract others. And what you do is actually, we want to understand the audience. We want to see what they want. And then we grow as a channel. We grow with the audience. So we are the audience.
There you go. That's
right. A whole different approach, but it's much
That's
smarter.
Right. It works out here because, you know, television is the same everywhere. Every day is a different day, right? Every day somebody's coming to you new. But at the same time, they know who you are. I was watching, you know, ProSieben is still ProSieben, you know, but that was yesterday. Today's a new day, and it's still, I'm the guy that they're going to be talking to and getting involved with, you know. And so as soon as they give me some sort of presentation or build me up for something, and it's been exaggerated or it's a bit of a lie, once you've already established that rapport as a friend, you get the same thing. Like, so, you know, once you're lied to, or that you're cheated on or somewhere, that sort of creates sort of a bit of a rift in the friendship. And it's very hard to build that back, especially in the pay TV platforms, because people are paying for that service. And so as you're paying for that service, you're expecting, you know, better quality, you're expecting, you know, a better result for what you are. The last thing you want to as a pay service is to be reminding people that they're paying for that service. you know, which is a mistake that, you know, I'm seeing out here at the place I formerly used to work at. They've brought in this team from Europe, and they're like, all the promotions you see, it's just, you know, buy up to this package and buy it for this and buy it for that. And, you know, it seems like they're really, it looks desperate, to be honest with you. Right. And at the same time, it makes you sit back and reminds you that you're already paying for this service. Yes. Do I really need this service? And then at the same time, I've got a choice of, I don't need this for Netflix. I don't need this for Disney. I don't need this for sports. I don't need this for news. I could take the money that I'm spending there, and I could be selective on other things going through there. So I think it's kind of not a very good strategy. And there's the one thing that you can end on, right? So a lot of the stuff that's being done is being done through the not being done from the viewer's standpoint. Everything you do, everything, right? It's got to be done through, you know, who's going to be seeing it at the end, to put yourself in their shoes. Because the viewers don't care how long it took to make a graphic. They don't care how complicated the shot was. They don't care about, you know, how long, how the matting and that kind of stuff actually works. What they care about is what they're seeing right there and then, and what they're getting out of it and what it's enticing them to do. And so that's the thing that we're supposed to be doing. We're supposed to be doing, you know, this stuff where we're communicating with the audience, where, you know, basically audience wranglers, and we're, you know, dedicated to motivating them to, not manipulating them necessarily. We're kind of asking them to share in an experience, whereas an advertising agency is just trying to sell them shit, right? So we're not interested in selling them shit. We're trying to sell them on the idea of an experience, and the experience is coming up in just a little while. Mm-hmm. It's just over here. Just stay right here with us. We're going to come. That experience is going to be happening. You know. So yeah,
I picture the Asian market as way more innovative, especially now in the recession, than Europe and the US. So and I know this is true. And what, from your perspective, because you live this culture, you are in this industry, what's the future of television?
Wow, excellent question. That's a hard one, man. So, you know, everybody said 10 years ago, TV was dead. Everybody said 20 years ago, radio is dead. But still, at the same time, radio is flourishing here. Right? So not flourishing, but I mean, it's still going quite hard. There's a lot of experiments with radio where you've got a completely AI radio station at the moment with AI voices and a program selector that's selecting all the music. Yeah. It's called Fly FM, I think. And they're doing everything as an experiment, you know, and to see how people are liking it and listening to it. And their ratings haven't changed. Well, you know, their ratings were much higher than they had been, but it's just come down back to normal levels. But again, that's kind of it. As far as television is concerned, you know, the way things have changed, COVID 2 years ago was something with Fent. It was a great opportunity for people in television if they looked at it properly, where, you know, you suddenly got an audience that's home during the daytime. But some television groups here still pushed the whole idea of prime time, and they're all fighting each other for prime time with this, you know, 7 o'clock to 9:30. Yeah. That's it. That's the only time that matters. No, you've got these people that are home during the daytime that are suddenly home with their kids. They could be watching TV. They could be sharing some stuff. They could be, you know, watching a movie together. They could be doing whatever. And it also came out at the same time that you had all of these streaming services, from Netflix to Disney Plus and that sort of stuff, offering themselves, and the smaller guys as well, offering themselves as 3 months free, 6 months free, just give us a try. You know, after the end of 6 months, you can sign up and you can pay and you can go. So there's a massive amount of content out there in all these different places, but people were tuning into local television because they wanted to get news about, you know, what was affecting them as far as COVID was concerned. Yeah. Where the danger spots were, when they could go outside, you know, what was happening locally anywhere. So for those local television stations, some of them took it on board and really kind of cleaned up their act in the daytime and their presentation and their news and their public service and everything that went with them, just to create, you know, to rebond with the viewer potential that they actually had out there. And then when COVID's over, it's all thrown away. It's all gone back to what it was. And at the same time, you've got these fast channels that are coming out. You got pay TV with some of them, like the place we just talked about, that is very mercenary as far as trying to get your money. And so they're bleeding a bit, but their answer for bleeding is to try and squeeze more blood from the stone, which is not doing them anything. They should be looking at, you know, how can we, you know, slow it down and change people's attitude, change people's mind. What else can we offer? What can we give them? And how can we speak to them? How can we, you know, revise that friendship and get them back on board? But at the same time, they're going out and they're putting out their own versions of streaming apps, which offers the same content that they have for a less price, which in my mind doesn't make much sense because everything's a TV, yes. Right? So yeah, that's a TV. What I'm talking to you on now is a TV. A TV is a TV.
So this, I remember like we, for you back in the days, we also built like a VOD, video on demand stuff. And is that like, would you say this has because you just said it, like you can watch it anywhere. It's not just the television screen, it's anywhere these days. This video on demand, and this is what the fast channels really do, right? They just put up one channel where you can watch maybe Friends like 24/7.
Yeah. Well, you know what you're getting. It's what you're familiar with, right? So if you go to something like, what can you get in Germany? Go to something like Pluto TV, Pluto, and that will have 300 channels, and they'll be broken down into sample channels, movie channels, entertainment channels, comedy channels, music channels, sports channels, and that sort of stuff. So you just go through the top bar. It's a very easy EPG that they've got, and then you click on it, and then it takes you down to the open menu for watching whatever. So, and sci-fi, for example, last night I was watching a couple of episodes while I was sitting. My tummy's not too good, so while I was getting up and going to somewhere, I was sitting and I was watching a couple of episodes of Outer Limits and Twilight Zone that I hadn't seen in a long time. So, but all that's there, but it's advertising supported. So, you know, if you don't mind every 10 minutes that it stops for a commercial break and it sells you insurance, or whatever,
Fine. We are the older generation. We are used to it. I know that my kids, they rarely watch linear television. They don't know what an advertisement is. And so, I find this quite interesting that it comes back, but a different form, right? It's not like it's actually not linear television anymore, because you can pick and choose. It's just you can tap into, I want to watch this kind of thing today, and then you want to watch. Yeah. So you have much. It's kind of linear, but it's still you have much more control.
It's been around. It's been around a lot longer than that, though. I mean, we had some friends come when we were living in Hong Kong. We had some friends come over about 2000, 2001, somewhere around there. And it's these twin kids that whatever. And they came in, we're sitting around the house talking away. And the boy comes up and says, "Hey, do you mind if we watch some TV?" "Sure, sure. I want to watch SpongeBob." I said, "Well, okay, that's on Nickelodeon. So here you go, Nickelodeon." No, I want to watch SpongeBob." "Yeah, okay, well, it's not on right now. I don't have any SpongeBob." "What?" And you know, he's really confused, and he's looking at the remote and that sort of stuff. And his dad was explaining, "Well, at home we've got a TiVo, and a TiVo records all the episodes of SpongeBob that he wants to see. And so, it was like you're creating your own video library, and your own video channel. So you could go in and you could select whatever episode of SpongeBob he wanted. And so, and the kid was 3 or 4, and so he only understood, you know, I get what I want right when I want it, no problem." None of this sitting around and waiting bullshit.
You think, like, I get what I want when I want it? Would that be the future of television?
Yeah. That's been the mantra of people watching TV for the last 20 years. You know, we made the mistake of keep pushing the whole idea of video on demand, whatever you want, you can have it right away, da 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 da. And so at the expense of, you know, channels themselves. So that's how COVID did change things a bit. Fast channels are changing things a bit, but as far as pay TV platforms, their cornerstones are news and sports, I guess, but not so much news, because terrestrials are still out there with local news. And so sports are still trying to, you know, football league, Bundesliga, all the other guys are out there trying to squeeze as much money out of anybody that they actually possibly can. So Sky or, Sky Germany has no choice but to, you know, charge viewers, extra money for actually watching the stuff. And so as soon as, you know, that's over, then pay TV is in a bit more of trouble, because they don't actually have, you know, some cornerstone that people really, really, really need. And so if you can buy Bundesliga games individually on some other platform, you know, you only want to watch the games you want to watch. You don't have to pay for all the other things. That's going to really, you know,
I'm not sure if they already do this over here, but I know that in Asia there was a thing like you could buy like a day ticket for something for those games.
Yeah, yeah. There's different places. There's Now TV in Hong Kong if you like Manchester City or Manchester United, you can buy the Manchester United channel, which is a 24-hour channel, and they play games delayed. But if you want to watch them live, you can watch an individual game for a certain price. But it's only the individual game that's connected to the club that you've bought the channel for. So if it's Man United, you can watch a Man United game for like $2 your channel. So, yeah, so you don't have to pay the $50 a month to pay for the sports pack. But the sports pack has a lot more in it. So if you like Formula One, as well as football, as well as, you know, Japanese league or baseball or whatever, all of that is there. But I mean, they're all riding in the coattails of the one thing that people want, which is, you know, Premier League or Bundesliga.
One more question for you, and this is, what's the future of the Asian market, and why should companies invest into Asia?
Well, Asia market is nothing but growth, period. We have, you know, more than half the world's population is here. It's just we're dissected into different skin tones and different religions. But, you know, India is a great example where you've got, you know, over 1 billion people with, you know, well over 100 languages and well over 200 gods and, you know, all of these different sectors that are built in. But as far as entertainment is concerned, you've got 6 or 7 very successful pay TV platforms. And the other weird thing about India, it's something to look at, is that by law, there's no such thing as exclusivity. So if you've got a show, Masked Singer or something like that, and I want to buy the show, just because I've sold to Tata Sky doesn't, you know, and I can get it too. Or if there's a particular football match or a particular football, you know, BPL or something that's gone in there to India, they can't have it exclusively. I can buy it as well. So all of these different places,
that's
whatever
nice.
The strategy
that's,
is.
That's, I really
that.
Like this.
So, yeah. But you know, the Masked Singer is a good example of, you know, that did travel well. So there are some program formats that have worked well in each of these different markets, but each of them has treated them in a different way. Right. So Thailand, for example, had everybody from politicians to, you know, stand-up artists and that sort of stuff inside the costumes, the outfits and that sort of stuff, but then had stretch on, they had lots of apps that they created, you know, for themselves on the phone using particular Thai songs that you would press and do whatever. And you were somehow interconnected to that world, and it became very interactive and people really liked it. And so the Thai guys started selling that game to other people that bought the Masked Singer. We had it here. It's still going on. Like as its popularity is dying around the world, it's just maintaining a good status quo across India, Thailand, here, Indonesia. And so it's all different kinds of music, but it's all for those particular places. So that's one thing. So program formats, that hasn't really changed. That's still something that, you know, Endemol and all those other people are going out. They're still selling all of that stuff going through there. Yeah, as far as TV channels and content is concerned, people's tastes are, you know, people jump on the back of it quite a bit. So the Philippines years ago, when Marcos was in power, they used to have some kids cartoon show on at lunchtime. It wasn't Power Rangers, but something along those particular lines. But people were going home and they would get in, you know, they were watching the show. And so they were coming back to work late. So he banned the show. And after Marcos, you know, passed away and got out of there, the television station that still had the rights to that show, they also had, you know, it was all in a package deal where they had this Argentinian, over the top soap opera, but they had this cartoon that people used to watch like 10 years ago. So they had to get rid of it. They only had 6 months left. So they took it and they put it on directly opposite their main competitor's news. So at 7 o'clock or 6 o'clock, they put it there. And so people were switching over in droves just to see it again. The guys that were doing the news, there was nothing wrong with their news. They just couldn't believe that people were, you know, going, you know, rushing home to watch this cartoon thing again. So once they got that cartoon thing going, everybody started buying similar things. Then that Argentinian thing, they played that at lunchtime. Again, it blew up like crazy. So then they're buying all these South American soap operas. Same thing's happening now with Korean content and Chinese content, where you have all of these Korean shows with, you know, the Korean actors and actresses are stunningly beautiful people with this perfect skin and all this stuff. And they're very formulaic. I mean, it's just, you know, rich girl falls in love with poor guy. Eventually they end up in, you know, working at the same hospital or whatever. It's a hospital drama, or it's a legal drama, or it's a police drama or whatever, but it's always the same thing. There's this love story that's actually interconnected in there, but they're done very, very well. They look great. The acting is really good. Stories are okay and compelling. And so we don't have any real Korean population here, but the Korean, we have Korean channels that play this stuff, and it's just through the roof. And then for each of the streaming services, Netflix, Disney Plus, and that sort of stuff, they all, by necessity, have to have very, very large Korean libraries of this content, because that's what people are watching. My wife, who's a Singapore Malay, who doesn't speak Korean, has been to Korea a couple of times, she watches this stuff nonstop. If we're traveling somewhere, she's downloaded this stuff and she's watching it like crazy. And I don't understand why. And also now Chinese dramas, they've seen the Korean wave as well. It doesn't matter what language you actually speak. China is taking their prettiest people and they're sticking them into the exact same things, except they're doing a lot more period pieces. So, you know, they're doing, you know, 1800s or Qin Dynasty or Chang Dynasty or whatever, you know. Going back and forth in time and the love stories of different people. And then a lot of Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, you know, martial arts style fights. People are eating it up like crazy. So those things are content that people are watching as well, as opposed to, you know, what is being locally produced in this market, you know, for all of those different channels. And so normally the platform shouldn't care. The platform should be happy if people are watching this content on their platform. You know, but a lot of the individual channels just get sort of, you know, crazy because they're not getting the ratings. But ratings shouldn't mean anything anymore. You know, that just means who's watching your show at that one particular time. Because of streaming, I'm going to wait 6 or 7 episodes first, and then I'm going to watch the show. And if I like it, I'll watch the second, then third, then fourth episode.
It's crazy. And in the beginning, you said you're smart, but now I just realized I totally underestimated the wealth of knowledge and information that you have around TV, like the whole TV industry, not just Asia, but really, you must watch a lot of TV.
I do. I just and trailers. My wife gets really upset. I watch tons of trailers because I make a lot of trailers, or help people make trailers, or tell them what's right and wrong, or even just voice a trailer. So, you know, there's way too many trailers watching. But as far as the future of TV is concerned, it's always going to have a place in whatever shape and form that it's going to be. People are always going to be entertained by whatever it is. People still need to sell computers and televisions and phones and that sort of stuff. There's content that's going to be out there plenty. So whatever that content is, the styles are going to change and do whatever. But that content exists forever. You can go back and you can watch it on whatever platform is going to have it. Period. You can watch, you know, full episodes of Columbo, which is a, you know, a police procedural from 1970. You can watch all those episodes on YouTube. So,
okay. Rob, I'm so sorry. I have to cut this short, and I want to have you back on the show because I know there's so much more.
Great. I'd love to be back, and I'll be feeling better next time. So I'll be awesome. More pumped up and ready to go.
Before we leave, I want one more question, which is, what do you want to leave the audience with? Like, what's the message that you want to put out there for the creative audience?
Okay, well, the creative audience, I mean, it's not dark, and it's not the darkest before the dawn. It is just fine. Everything's going to be okay. There's still people like me who are old and smelly and fat that are still doing well within the industry. Not well. I mean, I still need to make money. And I, please, by all means, contact me by any chance to help me help you. But, you know, there's a lot of different opportunities for all of us. And it doesn't have to be in the creation of content in that particular thing. As I was saying before, a lot of places, big and small, are creating their own in-house creative teams, and you can help help those guys mold that, supply them with graphics, whatever you actually need, help them out, get rid of advertising agencies. This is my mantra of some sort. Fire your agency. Find a way that you can take away that agency's work, because they are nothing. They are just superficial over substance. You guys are the substance itself. You deliver constantly all the time. And this is the other thing as well. Like, I don't know why, but I mean, working with clients, when they talk about their advertising agency, it's all lofty and this sort of stuff, and it's all forgivable. And, oh, they're coming up with all these different ideas, and, oh, it's okay that they're 2 weeks late for whatever it is. And then you get it, and then you're looking at it, and then the client's going, oh, I love it. You're like, no, why? And then you have to pull them aside and say, this may not work because of this, that, the next thing. And then, okay. But I don't want to upset the advertising agency. But when they're dealing with other people, like people that aren't being paid with the same with the advertising agency, they have none of that respect at all. They'll deal with a graphics guy in a very disdainful way. And again, you've got to explain to people, this is the guy that's going to be making stuff for you, that's going to be going out there. He's the guy that actually is making stuff that's going to be communicating directly with your target audience. This is the last guy you want to piss off. This is the guy you want, you know, to make, you know, happy and help him build up what it's going to be and make him.
It's really, it's like, you know, they, because they pay a ton of money to those agencies, like they respect them more. They listen to them. Yeah.
It just seems to be right. And so, and it's plus, you know, the agency is whining and dining them and telling them all sorts of stuff. And then showing them examples of things, which are just, you know, bizarre, you know, they look great, right? At first value, looking at all, it's fantastic, but that doesn't work for, maybe not this market, but it certainly doesn't work for, you know, the position of who you are and what that's about. And plus what you're saying is, you know, I saw one, it's gotta be 3 months ago. It was basically, this other client where the agency come back and it was going to be this, thing in dealing with, you know, their not their viewers, but their client base of people that were actually buying their product. And it was showing them, you know, not in the greatest light. Basically showing that people are kind of stupid to make up their stuff. And that's a great idea to do whatever. Go, no. This is what you're telling your viewers. This is what you're telling your you know, the people that are buying your product. This is what you think of them. That's not what you think of them. You like them, right? They're good people. They're saying, oh, no. Agency's right. Okay. Off you go. And they've made the spot. And I don't know, man. It's just, it's insulting.
Thanks for that rant. I love it. Rob, thank you so much being on the show.
Marco, nice to see you, man.
Way too long. Let's make this, let's not wait 10 more years. Let's do this sometime again very soon. Thanks for your time. And
got to cover that up. I don't know what that is. So yeah, sorry. Lovely to see you, man. Congrats on your success. And I hope to see you soon. And let me know when the show's on.
Obviously.
Thanks. Thanks for tuning in. My name is Marco Pfann, and hope to see you all again on our next show, where we unfold creative business minds.